From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. America was once the manufacturing king. Everything made in America. That's long gone. Now we're an idea economy, an innovation economy. Research and development is our bread and butter. What if we lost that, or worse, had it stolen? Some loud voices say that's happening right now. International computer hackers, especially out of China, digging deep into American networks and literally stealing our innovation future on a grand scale. This hour on Point, Chinese hackers and American R&D. You can join the conversation. Have you seen it in your company? Hackers from halfway around the world swiping your work. Is it paranoia to be worried? Is it high time? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We will hear in a moment from our experts on China's hackers and what's happening with American R&D and trade secrets. But first, the heir apparent top leader of China, Vice President Xi Jinping, is in the U.S. this week. Today, in Iowa, joining me now from Des Moines, Iowa, is William Wan, diplomatic correspondent for The Washington Post. William Wan, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
How is the Chinese VP's day in Iowa going?
It's going well. He landed here yesterday, had a really interesting day in Muscatine, Iowa, of all places, and is headed to a farm this morning with the governor and the Agriculture Secretary for the United States.
Now, this is where Muscatine, Iowa, river town there in Iowa, where 27 years ago he visited as a much younger, much lesser Chinese official and spent the night with a regular family there in their house in their kid's bedroom.
That's right. It's kind of one of these historical footnotes that just turned into a much greater thing later on. In 1985, he was a lowly provincial feed official, of all things, from Hebei province. They had a sister state relationship. And so basically on funding for just gas money, these volunteer organizers put him and I think five or six other officials from Hebei province up, just roping in friends from all around Muscatine to put them up in their houses. And he ended up sleeping in this very, very interesting housewife's room where her two boys used to sleep, surrounded by, Star Trek figurines and posters. And this was his first trip to China, and apparently it made enough of an impression that on this big tour he has made this the centerpiece of it.
I love that he's doing it. Tom Hoops, vegetable farmer there, saying he remembers very well that 1985 visit, and he's still very enthusiastic about Vice President Xi. And I love that he's gone. It's also, obviously, it's great PR to show him in that setting. Here he is a little earlier this week, William, in the White House, speaking through an interpreter about his hopes for his U.S. visit. This is China's Vice President, soon to be top leader, Xi Jinping.
And I hope to engage with a broad cross-section of American society during my current visit so as to deepen mutual understanding, expand consensus, strengthen cooperation, and deepen the friendship between the Chinese and American people.
William Wan, that sounds great. How's it going this week? How's that agenda going?
It's good. The thing with this visit is it's heavily, heavily scripted. And so you have to view all of it through the point of view that this is the great propaganda arm of the Chinese government kind of arranging all these things. But even then, there's just really interesting things kind of cropping up. This is for a lot of these U.S. officials, their first real chance to get eyes on him, see how he is as a personality, what his style and diplomacy is like. The consensus seems to be he's much more open, garrulous, spontaneous. Often these Chinese diplomats just reading off a script or a memorized script. He seems to be very, willing to kind of just engage in free-flowing conversation. And in Washington, at least, Biden has turned out to be a great matchup for him. He's the official host, mm-hmm. Vice President Biden, for Xi Jinping.
His counterpart, yes.
Just, mm-hmm. just partly because, you know, Biden's personality, he's in some ways completely mismatched with the Chinese. You know, they're very scripted, very close. He is, like, infamously long-winded, very open-natured.
Yeah.
And so I think this mismatch has actually turned out to be a great match. They seem to be getting along very well.
And what about on his view of the world and China's place in it, maybe America's place in it? He will succeed President Hu Jintao as head of the Communist Party later this year. He's slated probably to become the top leader of China next year. Does that mean a change in Chinese policy or steady as she goes?
It's very difficult to tell. He's saying all the right things to make people think that there's a possibility he may be more reform-minded, that he may be more open to a friendlier U.S.-China relation. But, you know, if you read his comments closely, he sticks to the standard script that, you know, he's standing up for Chinese rights on things like territorial disputes in the South China Sea, on their trade policies. You know, Obama and Biden both brought up intellectual property theft, currency valuation, which is a big fight between the two, where the U.S. feels like China's been unfair in how they do trade. So all these things, none of these big disagreements are getting resolved at all on this trip. This trip is much more about just the appearance diplomacy, building some kind of foundational relationship that they can continue on building on once he becomes president.
Let's hope they succeed in that. And Iowa seems to have helped in the last 24 hours with all of his activities there. William Wan, diplomatic correspondent for The Washington Post, there in Des Moines, Iowa today. Thanks very much for joining us, William.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Now, Chinese hackers and this country's future, America's future, large-scale invasion of American computer systems and vacuuming up trade secrets is the problem. It's gotten so bad that American business people traveling to China are advised to travel digitally naked so their laptop or smartphone won't become an access point for hackers. Nicole Perlroth has told the story for the New York Times. She joins us today from San Francisco. Nicole, thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what's the new routine for business people headed to China? What can't they do? What do they do?
It's so interesting. It's you're starting to see a bunch of companies, whether they spell this out in their policies or not, informing employees that if they travel to countries, and the subscript here is China or Russia, to not bring any sort of sensitive data, to only bring so-called loaner devices that you just use for the purpose of the trip. You erase them before you go. You have them erased the minute you get back. If a computer is checked at the border or inspected at the border for any reason in China, some companies will prevent you from ever plugging that computer or that phone into their network ever again.
Nicole, why all this very, very great care? What's the problem? What's the risk?
I think the risk is that smartphones in particular and the internet have opened up this entirely new terrain for corporate and government espionage. So, you know, typically corporate espionage was the work of either a disgruntled employee who was willing to sell a trade secret or someone who was sort of a corporate mole. But these days, it's much easier for hackers to hack into systems remotely by getting into our smartphones. Because we're taking these smartphones around with us and plugging them into our corporate networks and carrying proprietary information around with us, and it's much easier for them to basically implant themselves in a foreign traveler's device and get into a corporate network and their constituencies that way than plant a corporate mole or buy someone off for $1 million.
And it's happening. We're reading at a huge scale. You quote Joel Brenner, who was in the Director of National Intelligence here in this country, saying if a company has significant intellectual property that the Chinese and Russians are interested in, and you go over there with mobile devices, your devices will get penetrated. We're seeing a lot of other stories. It's not only China, but it seems to be most heavily based in China. I mean, you're describing travelers there. They leave their cell phone at home, their laptop at home. They bring loaner devices, one-time use. They wipe them clean the minute they leave. And they disable Bluetooth. They disable Wi-Fi. And in meetings, they not only turn off their cell phone, but they remove the battery. Why that?
Yes, that was a surprising one. So if the Chinese state owns the networks, they're able to remotely turn on your phone. And once they turn it on, they can remotely activate your microphone, your camera. And I realize this all sounds like some kind of spy
wild
film.
Yeah.
But this is something that every intelligence official I spoke with said this happens. And if you are in an important meeting, they said they're not only turning off their phone, they're taking out the battery because that's the only way they could make sure that their microphone or camera weren't turned on, recording everything they did.
It's incredible. You quote the top former FBI agent saying the Chinese are really good at covering their tracks. A lot of companies don't even know they've been penetrated, but reports say many hundreds have been. This FBI official saying we've already lost our manufacturing base. Now we're losing our R&D base. If we lose that, what do we fall back on? If all this is true, the stakes here are large, Nicole.
They're very large. You saw a story in the past couple of days about American Semiconductor, the small wind turbine company in Massachusetts that recently lost a Chinese wind manufacturer as one of their largest customers. I think in a day, they lost 70% of their revenues.
Yep.
And when people sort of backtracked to see what had happened here, they found an enormous amount of evidence that a Serbian employee, I think, who was working for the company in Austria, had some sort of communications with their Chinese competitor, and at one point a transfer of $1.5 million had been made. And literally, you know, not long after that, this Chinese competitor ceased to be a customer of this American wind turbine manufacturer, and they saw 70% of their revenue wiped out.
There's the old-fashioned mole way. You're describing for us the very large-scale new way, which is just hack in and take it. Vacuum up the information is the phrase we're hearing, and on a huge scale. Nicole Perlroth, we're grateful for your reporting on this and for, to you for joining us today. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Chinese hackers and American business secrets, American R&D allegedly being stolen wholesale, hand over fist, potentially hacking away this country's cutting edge, competitive edge. Now, there's a whole range of things that can be hacked, including up to and definitely including the Pentagon, U.S. infrastructure, you know, power grids and dams and all the rest. There's a lot of real concern about that. Senate Armed Services Committee had hearings this week. The South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham on Tuesday questioned the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, about the growing threat of China's cyber attack capabilities to commercial and military American computer systems.
Well, let's say if we could find that the People's Liberation Army was involved in hacking into our defense infrastructure, would you consider that a hostile act by the Chinese?
I would consider it to be a crime. I think there are other measures that could be taken in cyber that would rise to the level of a hostile act.
What would they be?
Attacking our critical infrastructure.
And that could be a hostile act.
I think so.
Allowing us to respond in kind.
Well, in my view, that's right.
Translation, critical infrastructure attacks can become practically acts of war. Now, we're looking at something just a little bit different than that today, though very much related, and that is going after R&D, going after trade secrets, going after cutting-edge technology recipes that should fuel the future of the American economy. On February 8th, just last week, at a House committee meeting on cybersecurity in the private sector, Michigan Representative Mike Rogers spoke about the cost of cyber threats to the United States and what countries are leading the threat.
We don't talk about it a lot because companies are reluctant to talk about it. The real number, we think, is closer to somewhere between $300 billion and $1 trillion in lost intellectual property per year. Countries like China are leading that charge. Russia's not far behind. Iran's capabilities are getting better.
It's not just China, but China is very big in this. They're Mike Rogers, Michigan Republican, chairman of the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. We're going to look at this today. Joining me now from Washington is Dmitry Alperovich, former vice president of threat research at cybersecurity giant McAfee, Inc. Now he's president of his own company, Asymmetric Cyber Operations, and sits on the board of directors of the cybersecurity company, CounterTAC. Dmitry, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire is Scott Borg, Director and Chief Economist for the United States Cyber Consequences Unit. It's a nonprofit research institute that studies the strategic and economic impact of cyber attacks. Scott, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, good to be talking with you again.
Scott, let's go to scale first. We'll talk about how it's done, but it's kind of hard to get our heads around the scale of this. We're reading intelligence reports coming out talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of American companies penetrated and trade secrets vacuumed up. What's the scale of this problem?
It's a little bit hard to describe the scale because a lot of the effects are delayed. So we are right now suffering losses of intellectual property that will have a huge impact only over the years to come. But the scale is probably beyond anything that people can easily imagine. This is probably the biggest transfer of wealth in a short period of time that the world has ever seen.
How many, when you say transfer of wealth, you mean the wealth that is implicit in this case, American R&D going out the door or out the back door of our computer systems?
What we're seeing is the theft of entire industries. We have entire industries that are being shut down in America and also in Japan and Western Europe and being replicated in Southeast Asia.
Dimitri, how does that work? How does that happen?
Well, I can tell you, Tom, from my experience doing these investigations over the last number of years, that every single company that is a large multinational, sort of the Fortune 2000, Global 2000 companies, every single one of those companies has been penetrated in the last few years. In fact, I've said before that there are only two types of companies at that scale, those that they know they've been hacked and those that don't yet know but have been hacked nevertheless. And in fact, it's not just the big companies, it's the small companies, it's law firms that have very confidential information preserved on their clients. It's small solar power companies and high-tech companies. But it's not just about high-tech. You have seen entire sectors of our economy getting penetrated by the Chinese. I'm talking about agriculture, insurance, energy, obviously high-tech and IT, but many, many other industries as well. They're literally going after anything that is not bolted down, and they're shipping it over to China through this virtual theft.
Now, we heard Congressman Mike Rogers saying, not just China, Russia, Iran moving on this front, but as far as we can tell, what about the scale with China? Is it bigger? Is it the biggest in this, Dimitri?
I can tell you from my experience, the Chinese are responsible for at least 95%, and that's probably a conservative estimate of the problem. And while Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, they're all problematic, the Chinese are the only ones that can really leverage that information and build up competitive industries. Russia and others don't have the manufacturing base to reproduce a lot of the IP that they would steal in this mechanism. The Chinese can.
We'll talk about how all this would be coordinated, if indeed this is what's going on. Scott Borg, there was a story this week in the Wall Street Journal about Nortel, the huge Canadian communications company, apparently penetrated and had material taken for a long time. It gave us a sense it's across the border, but, Google's had its problems. No American company appears to be immune. This Nortel story gave us a sense of just how deep the penetration could go and how much could be taken.
That's absolutely true. And not only that, one of the reasons we're hearing the Nortel story is that Nortel doesn't exist anymore. Nortel was broken up and sold off. So now people feel that it's safe to talk about Nortel's losses. We have companies that are more important, that are larger by far, that have been penetrated utterly, but nobody dares talk about it for fear of lawsuits.
Because they'd have lawsuits, they'd have losses on the stock market, it would just be a business nightmare for them.
Yes. One of the interesting developments just in the last few weeks is we saw the SEC filings that came in after companies were directed to report cyber losses, cyber attacks, cyber risks, and hardly any of them did, including some of the big companies that had previously admitted to being victims of massive cyber attacks. They just left it out of their filings.
Dimitri Alperovich, I'm still trying to get our heads around just how this works. I mean, Nortel is now talking, or a former employee there, who says that for more or less 9 years, Chinese hackers had access to everything. And bear in mind, this was a world-leading, global-leading communications company. He said they had plenty of time. All they had to do was figure out what they wanted. Now, we look out at the world today, Dimitri, and there are some real world-beating communications companies now in China who are supplying infrastructure for the whole world. Could these be connected?
Well, there is no proof connecting them, but certainly very suspicious. So the company you're probably talking about is Huawei, which is now one of the largest telecom equipment manufacturers in the world. 15 years ago, they were almost a nobody. Today, infrastructure of most countries, even countries in Western Europe, Latin America, Southeast Asia, they're all running Huawei infrastructure. In fact, Huawei has been working very hard to try to get a footprint here in the United States as well. And the administration so far has forbidden U.S. Telecom companies from purchasing that equipment. But it is a huge concern. And what you've seen happen to Nortel is not atypical. In fact, most of these operations are not just smash and grab where someone goes in and quickly steals something and gets out. It's a long-term persistent intrusion where they're sitting and literally siphoning off data as you're building it up. They're looking at not just intellectual property, but very tactical information that can help them win deals. They're looking at negotiation documents, price lists, customer information, emails between executives, anything that they need to get your blueprint, your manual for the game and beat you out in the marketplace.
You know, Scott, we want to be careful as we look at this. I mean, you could get into a kind of a Cold War fever here when you think about the future of the economy and American ingenuity sort of flowing out the back door secretly. I'm looking here at an editorial in Wired magazine. They're pretty wired into this world, and they're saying, be careful here. Cyber war is the new yellow cake. And they're talking back to the run-up to the Iraq war when all the stuff was being put out about, you know, nuclear stuff that was in reputedly in play. It turned out not to be. Wired magazine says, you know, evidence to sustain such dire warnings is conspicuously absent. They say, stop the apocalyptic rhetoric, the alarmist scenarios, the sense here, and they're talking about more than just R&D loss, but the sense that we could overplay this threat, Scott.
The Wired editorial that you're referring to is primarily talking about military development of cyber attack tools and cyber attack defenses. They're not really talking about the kind of loss of intellectual property that we've been discussing in this program. I think, actually, the Wired article is making a very good point. There's a lot of hysteria, especially surrounding the term cyber war. We've not had a cyber war. We are not at cyber war. I think that term is used very irresponsibly. But this other thing that we're talking about...
This is cyber war as in knocking out power grids and dam functions and all the rest.
A real cyber war would have effects very much like a nuclear war. Mm-hmm. A real cyber war would destroy critical infrastructure industries physically and have very long-term effects. We're not close to that.
Mm-hmm. You're saying this is about intellectual property and about business practices, and if you look there, it's big, it's real, and it is an incredible number of our top companies at this point.
Yes, it also goes beyond what people think of as intellectual property. We're talking, Dimitri already made this point, but it's worth emphasizing. We're talking about all of the information that allows a company to prosper being sucked out of it. We're talking about the information that makes a company a technology leader, a market share leader, a cost mm-hmm. leader, an innovator of any kind.
It's hard to picture, Dimitri, how this would actually work. The amount of coordination to go after so much information across so many different industries from halfway around the world, suck it out and assemble it into something that would be useful to a huge array of potentially of Chinese firms. I mean, how would that be coordinated?
Well, that's a great question. Through the publicly available information, it's very hard to determine if this is being coordinated or actually run by the Chinese government, or if it's individual companies within China. They're doing this for their own benefits. Of course, most companies in China are actually state-owned, so the distinction there is a very tiny one. But you do have to look at some of these cases. So, for example, I revealed an operation called Shady Rat in August of last year, which was a 5-year long-term intrusion into not just one company or two companies, but 70-plus organizations across the globe in 14 countries. And you didn't just have the commercial companies being impacted by that, but you had government agencies, you had national security-related think tanks, and a variety of nonprofits and dissident groups. And when you look at the target list, and this was all orchestrated by one group in China, you have to assume that there is at least some connection to the Chinese government, because not all of the targets are commercial in nature. Some of them are very political. Some of them are very national security-centric. And you have to assume that the Chinese government, is, at a minimum, is condoning this activity, and at worst is actually directing it.
Well, we've got Mike Rogers, again, in Congress, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee there, saying some notion that this isn't nation-state-driven is just false. Let's get to our listeners. John in Providence, Rhode Island. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I had two quick points. Mm-hmm. One was a question, maybe too pointed, but I was wondering why, as a consumer, I should really care if Chinese hackers are stealing American trade secrets, because intellectual property is a form of protectionism, and we've heard for so many decades that the best thing for American consumers is for prices to go down. Don't worry, that'll help the global economy. So how is intellectual property any different than industrial production? We were told that those jobs, it doesn't matter, you know, the economy will shift, it's just about the free flow of money, right?
Yeah, I hear the question in a kind of political perspective.
I wish that the argument would stay away from the national security front, because I really think that's just silly right now.
Silly? Do you think our economic health is not related to our national security ultimately?
I don't see where you're going with that.
Well, all right, then we'll explore it. How about it? Scott, I'll come first to you. It's just intellectual property. That's a kind of protectionism. Why should a consumer care?
In an information economy, the value that a company can create and capture depends on the amount of information that they can put into play that their competitors can't. It's the economic effect of that information, differential, that drives our economy. So when you lose that information, you are losing your ability to create value, and you will be replaced by whoever has that information. Now, on the Chinese side, it looks to them like they're doing the world a favor. They steal the information. They deploy it more widely. They are increasing the value that's being created.
Sort of John's point here. They maybe pump it out then more cheaply, the products that ensue.
Exactly. And very temporarily, this is true. But what they're also doing is they're transferring resources away from the companies that know how to innovate and putting them into the hands of companies that don't know how to innovate. And over time, what they're doing is potentially depriving the world of the economic and technological innovations that will fuel the growth of the world economy. So we're really taking away the future growth of the world economy in many areas. This is very, very bad over time.
If you're in fact undermining the American institutions, companies or otherwise, that are currently doing that, but down the road wouldn't, because the economic foundation for that work would be gone?
That's right. If we're transferring those businesses to parts of the world where they don't have a background, where they weren't able to do that R&D for themselves, and where they don't really know very much about the industry they've just stolen, we're losing the innovation that was to come.
Well, who says they don't just pick up the innovation? You know, they eventually climb that learning curve, Dimitri, and do it themselves.
Well, at the end of the day, just to answer the original question, the consumer, the American consumer, should care because his or her job is at stake. Nortel is a great example, the company we just talked about. They're out of business now. Tens of thousands of people that used to work at this company, their jobs are gone. They're no longer employed or have to find another job. Imagine that scale into entire sectors of our economy. It is a huge problem. And again, just to reinforce what Scott said, it's not just about the intellectual property theft, because to some extent, the intellectual property theft will resonate over many years. So when someone steals your intellectual property, it's not like they can take that intellectual property and next day come out with a product. It's going to take years, particularly if it's a manufacturing business that you would have to build the factories and build the products and start marketing it. But if you're stealing the tactical business information, as I mentioned, the price list, mm-hmm. and negotiation strategies, if mm-hmm. you can figure out how to outbid a company, even with an inferior product, you can put them out of business.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking today about Chinese hackers and American business secrets, American R&D, allegedly being stolen wholesale, kind of hand over fist, potentially hacking away this country's cutting-edge competitive edge, and happening right now and for some time already in a lot of industries. Scott Borg is with us today. He's chief economist for the United States Cyber Consequences Unit. Dmitry Alperovich is with us. He's president of the consulting firm Asymmetric Cyber Operations, was with McAfee, the big computer security firm. Scott, Dmitry, I've got Jay writing to us here online. It says, China has the enormous manpower to sort out all the chaff and report to their superiors when they hit the gold mine of hitting a U.S. scientist's home computer. Then they have more knowledgeable computer people examine that U.S. computer in depth. Dmitry, is that how it works? I mean, there's got to be a lot of chaff out there. It's kind of mind-boggling.
It is. Oftentimes, they literally take everything that they can get their hands on, whether it has value or not, and we have to assume that they have huge processing farms of both computers and people that are sifting through that information and trying to figure out what is valuable and what is not. I can tell you one interesting case we had investigated a couple of years ago for a big electronics company here in the United States that actually does a lot of business, manufacturing business in China. They had sent one of their employees over to Beijing to give a presentation to their partners within China, and once that person gave a presentation, someone came up to him and asked for a copy of a slide deck, his PowerPoint deck, and he gave it to them on his own USB stick, and then when that USB stick was returned to that individual a few minutes later, it had a piece of malware on it that that individual did not realize was implanted on it. When he returned back to the United States, he plugged in his computer into the company network, and literally within hours, the company network went down because the Chinese hackers jumped onto that machine and started literally exfiltrating terabytes, just massive amounts of data, schematics, and all the intellectual property of that company back to China. In this case, it was not a very sophisticated intrusion, and in fact, they could have done it a little bit more stealthily and not take down the company network because they're stealing the information. But this just shows you the sophistication of the threat.
And just how widespread. I mean, even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce had this, the situation that came up a year ago or more, where they had people in China, they came back and suddenly, you know, they had problems in their own computer system. Their printers started printing out stuff with Chinese characters in it, not produced by them. They found that even a thermostat, I think it was, Dmitry, in an apartment they owned in Washington, D.C., was picking up data from around it and transmitting it right out of that apartment, maybe back to China.
Well, it's interesting now. All of these devices, not just the traditional computers that we typically think of, like laptops and desktops, but you know, our mobile devices, even things like thermostats, are essentially mini computers. They have an operating system. They're connected to the internet or to the network, to the local network. They can be infected, either accidentally or perhaps with some nefarious use.
Michael in Nashville, Tennessee. Michael, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, I think all is fair in love and war. We love the low prices that we get when we manufacture in China, and we've basically hacked into their human resources to be able to get these low prices. And, you know, it's going to have to up the game on our education, our science, the kids that are growing up today. We're going to have to do the same thing back to them when it comes down to it. It's a war of information and technology and getting the upper hand.
But how do you keep the upper hand, you know, if you put in all the investment for the education of your citizens, and then when they finally produce that great innovation, zip, it goes right out the back door. Still all's fair, Michael?
Well, we can share that information and technology. It's a global market today, and you know, if we can share some of that education on one side of it, and it's going to pretty much what somebody knows on one side of the world, they can learn on the other side pretty easily.
Well, sooner or later, but as Scott points out, there's economic advantage in that period when that information is produced and held by one player. But you raise an interesting point. I mean, Scott. You know, Michael takes it really up to a mega political level that we've hacked into China's human resources. We haven't complained when those factories where they work 12, 15 hours a day, you know, churn out our iPods and iPads. So maybe we don't have a foot to stand on ethically now. What about the ethics here?
Well, this is all very one-sided. The United States is not stealing information or really stealing anything else. We're paying for the things that we receive from China. The
only thing that is allowing us to prosper over the long term, the only real advantage we have as a country is our technological advantage, our ability to innovate and create wonderful new technologies that provide greater value really for the whole world economy. If that's stolen away from us, if we can't maintain that, then we have no basis for having a higher per capita GDP than China. This is not something that we can lightly give up. It's not a case where all is fair. It's not a case where everybody is doing the same thing. This is very, very asymmetrical in every department. By the way, one of the things that's limiting China's ability to benefit economically from this information they're stealing is they don't have enough people who understand how we do business in the West and how these technologies work. And so they can't actually separate the gold from the chaff. They can't actually utilize most of the information that they're stealing. So a lot of the numbers that are being stated are the potential losses, not the real losses. We're not really suffering vast amounts of damage every year yet. It's important. It's large damage. But it's the potential for the coming years here that we're really worried about. This is potentially devastating economically.
Happening all over. I've seen you quoted, Dimitri, saying after the big earthquake in China a couple of years back, some satellite communications equipment was rushed into China from a Danish firm. They deployed that to help the Chinese there. And the next thing they knew, apparently their computers were compromised and their technology was being sucked out.
Exactly. They liked it too much. With friends like these, who needs enemies, right? And I want to add something here. It is not a fair fight. Scott is absolutely right. In the United States, we have a policy here that the U.S. government will not engage in spying activities for the benefit of private sector.
Do we really and truly have that? I mean, it sounds like what we would have on the books, but is that really the way it is?
Absolutely. We do not engage in economic espionage as a policy of the United States government. And in fact, it is illegal for private sector companies to hack, and they can get prosecuted and thrown in jail if they do that. So it is very much one-sided, where the Chinese are stealing everything and we can't retaliate. And I can't tell you how many conversations I've been with major executives of large companies that are just frustrated to no end that this activity is taking place. All of their economic secrets, the billions of dollars of investments that they've put into the development of these technologies, are being stolen. There is literally nothing they can do to fight back.
Danielle in Woodward, Iowa. Thanks for calling, Danielle. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah. I'm so glad to talk to your technical experts. I am an adjunct professor at Iowa State University. I walked out of there with a computer that I'm using to fulfill grant requirements.
Yeah.
It's a Mac. Came from China. Is it possible to put in some sort of a sleeper code? Because I often link with Iowa State's computer, and we're talking about this amazing brain trust of technological innovation. It's science and technology. Is it possible to get into the technical information?
Yeah. No, I understand the question. I only draw my breath in, Danielle, because it's you start to absorb this, and then you wonder, how do we operate if we have to be concerned all the way down to the level of the Mac you buy, you know, there at the university. But well, let's think about it, Dimitri. China-made Mac. Do we have another portal here to hacking away American secrets, academic or otherwise?
Well, it's definitely a concern. Now, it's very likely that the Chinese factory that produced that Mac did not actually know that that Mac is going to end up in Danielle's hands. So it's probably unlikely that that Mac arrived already with some piece of malware installed on it, although we have seen cases of that where in the manufacturing chain some malicious software was introduced into the process, and millions of units of USB sticks, for example, were shipped with malware on them. But it's a fairly rare case. More often than not, it's a very targeted intrusion. So if they know that Danielle is working on something sensitive that they're interested in, they will target Danielle specifically, or Iowa State University, or the organizations they work with to get access to that information.
Let's go to Matt in Newton, Massachusetts. Matt, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah. Tom, it's great to talk to you.
Great to have
you. Guest.
Thank you.
What I kind of hear in this conversation are two different things, one of which is very true, which is that there is a lot of intrusion going on, a lot of software theft that is occurring, and one of which is very false. And I worked in software as a developer, and now I'm actually a salesman. And the second false part that I'm hearing is actually a sales pitch, which is that activity that's going on is purely the domain of, like, nationalistic attempts to, you know, take over our intellectual property. But I think a lot of it comes from a lot of other sources, and the attempt to make it about nation states is an attempt to sell us on the idea that we need to spend billions and billions of dollars in essentially a new arms race.
I think that's a very legitimate concern, Matt. I know exactly what you mean. I keep asking myself as I listen to this, but what if it's so much of it is tracked down, traced down to Chinese hacking sources? What do we do with that information?
I think a lot of it probably is Chinese hackers, but I don't think that a lot of it is necessarily nationally funded. And I think that you'll find this in many, many countries where there is a lower level of socioeconomic development, where there are people who are striving, and where there is a lot of money to be made in this sort of asymmetric, you know, attempt to get that money. They don't have the infrastructure, they don't have a lot of opportunity, but
right.
Software is universal. And if they can steal software or work with software, I mean, the hotbed of this activity used to be Eastern Europe before the fall of communism in that area, because it was a way of equalizing themselves and participating on a very high level, an equal level with the rest of the world.
Matt, let us look at that. Scott Borg, maybe this is just individual Chinese, you know, hackers or companies just striving, just trying to get a little leg up in the world, not a national project.
So one of the reasons that I praised that Wired article was that it was cautioning about the kind of conclusions we draw from it and the kind of assumptions that we make.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that the caller just said we were saying are not things that we were saying. In China, we have not one central center that's doing all of this. We have a lot of different organizations and a lot of different parts of the government, and they're operating independently and very differently. When we analyze their attack techniques, we discover very different skill profiles. One attack coming out of China will have great programming but lousy access or penetration technology. Another, it will be the reverse. So we're confident that we're looking at many different groups in China, many different groups that are different parts of the government. We also are seeing a lot of this going commercial. Starting 18 months ago, spy techniques that were probably developed under the sponsorship of the government of the People's Liberation Army in China began to be offered commercially. They were offered primarily to markets in Southeast Asia, in Indonesia, Malaysia, South Korea, and so on. And there are commercial services now that can be hired to carry this out. So we're not talking about something that is centralized, but it is overwhelmingly Chinese-based these days. Dimitri's estimate that 90-95% of the activity was coming out of China is, I believe, accurate. China is engaging collectively as a country in an order of magnitude higher level of cyber attacks, greater quantity than anybody else.
Dimitri, let me ask you about that. I'm looking at a big Bloomberg report on this, and they're naming all kinds of companies in the U.S. that have had trouble with this. Of course, Google, the biggest example, most prominent. I mean, it got to the point where they made a big public stink about it. But Bloomberg is drawing lines between China's most recent five-year economic plan, where they outline the target industries where they want China to succeed. And they're very specific. You know, it's clean energy, biotech, advanced semiconductors, IT, high-end manufacturing, aerospace, telecom, you know, drugs, medical devices. And then Bloomberg goes and they find corresponding American companies in exactly those target fields, which have been raked through the hacking process, Dimitri.
That's exactly right. Do we have proof that this is centrally organized and the Chinese Communist Party, the leadership, is directing each and one of these hacks? Of course not. But there's so much circumstantial evidence now that key strategic priorities for China, whether it's agricultural priorities or intellectual property priorities, are all tied to the intrusion activities into companies that are leaders in that space. It just happens time and time again. And I'll mention this again, that in my investigations that I worked on, and I worked on hundreds of these cases now, I have seen same groups in China that are going after intellectual property, they're going after business information, going after very, very political targets. They're going after Falun Gong, which is, of course, a religious sect. Chinese dissidents that the Chinese government is cracking down on. There's no one in the world that is interested in the Falun Gong. So when you have those types of targets combined with national security targets, defense contractors, government networks being penetrated by the same exact actors that are going after the intellectual property, you have to assume that there's some coordination happening with the Chinese government there.
Can this be somehow stopped? I mean, let's say it's going on and it creates a real competitive advantage for China. I mean, cyber spying is a lot cheaper than product development. We can't really afford in this country to do the development and then have the stuff made and sold there. Is there a way to stop it? Is there a legislative way to stop it, for example, Dimitri?
Well, I have not seen a single company yet, including companies like Google, that are at the top edge of their intellectual prowessness and knowledge mm-hmm. about computer systems, being able to stop this activity. The fact of the matter is that when someone is trying to get in, when it's a highly coordinated, highly financed attack, and that is persistent, where these attackers can keep trying again and again and again until they get in. It's very much like terrorism. They have to be right only once. We have to be right 100% of the time. Those odds are unsustainable. A company will eventually get hit. And as I've mentioned, pretty much every single company that the Chinese may be interested in has been hit over the years.
Scott, so, how do we solve this then? If it's as big a problem as you all are suggesting, what can be done?
So we can't absolutely stop it, but what we can do is we can make the costs of carrying out a given cyber attack very high. We can make it increasingly difficult. We can require the attackers to deploy very extensive resources over a considerable period of time. And that, you know, that has a lot of benefits. That causes the attackers in some cases to give up or decide it's not worth their trouble. In other cases, at least it shifts them to different targets. But in addition to increasing the costs of the attackers, we have to put this on the diplomatic agenda now.
I.e., for example, with the Chinese vice president in town, say, hey, cut it out. But can you imagine the Chinese just saying, we're done with that? I mean, you describe it as having so much momentum. We've just got 10 seconds, but is there an answer there?
It's too lucrative to stop, but Scott is absolutely right. We have to find economic pressures, perhaps trade sanctions, perhaps action in World Trade Organization. Ultimately, it's an economic theft that's happening on a massive scale, and there's got to be an economic response to it.
Our eyes are open today. There is so much to think about here, and we will. Dmitry Alperovich, president of Asymmetric Cyber Operations, thanks for being with us, Dmitry.
Thank you.
Scott Borg with the United States Cyber Consequences Unit, director and chief economist there. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you again for your attention to this subject.
This is On Point.